Hi guys, welcome to the Tennis the World podcast, and in today's episode I have a chat with Ryan Plevin, an athletic performance coach at the National Tennis Center in Melbourne. With Brian's qualifications and experience as a tennis coach, he is the physical trainer I need to talk to. He is currently working with some pro players, and my main goal for this conversation is to pick his brain about how you can become a tennis athlete. And I think you will enjoy this one. Let's go to the episode. Hi guys, welcome to a new episode of the Tennis the World podcast. Today I'm with Ryan, athletic performance coach, and I just experienced that on the court. Thank you for the session we just had.
My pleasure. I hope you survived.
yeah, I did, and there's still a session in front of me in the gym, so maybe I will look less fresh then. Thank you for your time for this podcast.
My pleasure.
And I'm really looking forward to discover with you how amateur players like me can become a better tennis athlete. Mm-hmm. And what we can learn from the pros as well, and just your experience you have over the years. So really looking forward to that. But before we start on really the topic, who is Ryan? And I know like you're a really humble guy, but still, like, why should I and we listen to you? What's your experience and your story?
Humble, yeah. Well, that's because I'm awesome, personally. No, I'm joking. My background, I started out in this industry as a tennis coach. But first, I worked when I was probably finishing school in high school. I got offered a job by my tennis coach who said, you know, do you want to give it a crack and try it? And then I really enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed tennis coaching and being on the court, and started working with like little juniors with, you know, the red ball and the orange ball, and then, you know, had some squads of my own, and really enjoyed just coaching in general. I think that's when I really found a little bit of a niche for, is that I was quite good at teaching and communicating, and I liked helping people. But I was always, at that same time, I was very interested in the gym at the, and lifting myself, and experimenting with different like training programs and things like that. My good friend got into powerlifting at the same time. So he kind of brought me into that world a little bit, and I did a few powerlifting competitions, which was pretty cool to experience. So that kind of sparked my interest for like performance training in that sense. So my university degree was a human movement and exercise science degree. So I did that while I was tennis coaching. And my goal was always to kind of get into strength and conditioning or athletic performance training, but I think I really enjoyed the tennis coaching, so I kind of stayed with that for a little bit longer than I probably thought I would, and was trying to find ways to kind of integrate some of the work that I was experiencing in the gym and learning at university into my tennis coaching. But it got to a point where I think I started to get a little bit burnt out with tennis coaching, because as much as I was enjoying it, it wasn't exactly where I wanted to be. So I started to step my foot outside of the tennis court and get some experience in the gym, and did a bit of personal training, all at the same time still finishing my studies, finishing my undergraduate degree, and then I started a master's degree in strength and conditioning. So it's an exercise science specialized in strength and conditioning. And around that time, I was very lucky enough to meet a few really high-level strength and conditioning coaches, Jason Stacey being one of them, who works with Sabalenka, and I did a few of his workshops, and he helped sort of guide me in a direction, and I ended up getting a job at a performance facility here in Melbourne, out in West Footscray. You can look them up, Melbourne Fitness and Performance. I'll give them a bit of a plug.
Yeah, it was good.
So that's where I kind of started out and gained really good quality experience learning how to coach not only athletes but also general population clientele, as well as applying that in my personal training. And then I was still tennis coaching at the time, so I was kind of sort of balancing three jobs. And then I found that that was getting a bit too much, and I realized that where I wanted to be was in the gym. I really enjoyed it, I loved it, and I was getting good at it as well. And I was just applying my coaching methodologies that I learned through my tennis coaching. I should also mention I was very lucky to work with a really, really awesome mentor coach at my tennis coaching business, who now works at Tennis Australia in the Hot Shots and the Development program. He actually heads that up. So he was very influential in my coaching style. And then, yeah, once I finished my master's degree, I kind of decided, no, this is exactly what I want to be doing full time. So I moved away from personal training and invested myself fully into athletic performance or strength and conditioning coaching at MFP, and then dabbled in working with my network of tennis coaches, working a bit with some of their programs that they were doing, to eventually now being involved here at Tennis Australia and Tennis World, building out our own performance program here. So essentially we're like a bit of a privatized version of Tennis Australia. We still work in the same facility, but it's not part of the National Academy. We just do our, we're building out our own performance program per se. So I work with a few other coaches, and we are building out a comprehensive performance program for tennis athletes. Yeah, so cool. Now I kind of do both.
Yeah, I also read and I can see that, and I experienced it too on the court, that you're specialized in the tennis as well, but you're also helping other athletes and people to move better and feel better, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm lucky enough to work with other sports other than tennis. Tennis being my main passion and where I love being, but yeah, it's really important, I think, as from a coaching perspective, to have my foot in other sports, because you can really learn a lot from the type of training that you might give like a rugby athlete or a football athlete or a cricketer to a tennis player. Like, there might be some crossover and similarities, but obviously the sports are different, so you have to train them differently. And you can learn some really cool methodologies and philosophies around then applying it to potentially the tennis court or the tennis player as well. So I do enjoy working with other sports, because it kind of keeps it a bit fresh and a bit new, other than always being involved with the same athlete style and the same sport. Even though I do love tennis, it is nice to kind of have a little bit of a break it up a little bit.
Yeah, there's always something you can learn from other areas and other sports.
Absolutely.
In tennis. And do you also think that it's in your benefit that you you had experience as a tennis coach on the court, for now being a performance coach, athletic performance coach?
Absolutely. My level of tennis coaching, I never worked with like professional players or high level players from like a challengers or futures level, but I worked enough in the sport to understand it, and I did my tennis coaching qualification, so I learned a lot about the biomechanics and stuff of the sport. Obviously playing it as a young kid and playing the sport yourself, like same thing like you, I played club competitions and a few tournaments and things like that. So having a good feel and understanding for the sport, and then obviously from a coaching side, understanding kind of the biomechanics of the shots and the movement patterns, the force outputs, all that sort of thing, really does help when you're then creating programs. But I think also just understanding the sport and feeling it. It's the same way, like if I was to go and coach a rugby athlete, I know that from my strength and conditioning knowledge, I would be able to coach them, but never playing rugby, you don't quite have the same appreciation for, say, someone who has been involved in that sport since a kid.
Yeah, you just, like on the session on the court, you spoke about the why between certain exercises. And I think you can understand from just your knowledge why a rugby player should do that. But if you really did it, you know, now it's like a next level of why you should train in a particular way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's not to say you have to play the sport or be involved in the sport to do it. But I think, if you're a coach who's really interested in that sport, you can learn it. You can research it and that sort of thing. And I've definitely, for example, with tennis, have researched it a lot more than I would have if I hadn't been working in it as much. And especially being fortunate enough to work with professional players who are on the tour and most recently played in the Australian Open, you have to have that high knowledge of how the sport works, not only from a physical loading perspective, but everything else that goes into it, and how tournaments run, how matches run, all that sort of thing. So I think having that understanding of the sport is going to make you a better coach, because then you can actually create more contextual programs comprehensive programs for the athlete and get the most out of them. Because at the end of the day, as a coach, your job is to make your athlete better. But on top of that, feeling the sport and feeling what you're doing is a huge element that a lot of strength coaches miss, is that you can study it, but actually feeling it and training yourself and doing it is a huge bonus to actually experiment and feel the why, and feel what it's going to be like if I gave it to an athlete.
Yeah, that's why I approached you as well. I want to learn a lot as a coach, but I'm like, I need to do it as well.
Mm.
We also use now, and it worked really well actually, by promoting the program we have, that it was during the Australian Open was watch it, learn it, but do it.
Yeah.
And it's in the same like kind of topic that you can listen to this podcast. We can talk about how to become a better athlete, but when you do it, you will actually become better and feel why it's working or not working or something like that. So in those, let's say 10 years experience, what did you, you cannot explain this of course in 1 minute, but what is the big biggest elements that you learned about building an athlete, a tennis athlete, and what is really important to become an athlete as a tennis player?
That's a very good question. I think
maybe there are some things that you had when you or learned from the perspective of a tennis coach, and like moving on the court, certain things to become better.
Yeah.
And then when you dived into the athletic performance side of it, is we're like, okay, but that adds something to it that's really important.
I think what I found as a young coach, just making my way into the industry, I found really intriguing was just, and what got me excited to learn more about it was just seeing on myself as a player, this is way back when, I'm not nearly as good as I used to be, but seeing when I got into the gym and lifted and did strength training or did some sprint work or whatever it is, on court movement, conditioning, but mainly from a strength perspective in the gym, when I was doing all my lifting and I was still doing some powerlifting stuff, that was a lot of what I was doing early on because it's what I knew before I actually studied more and learned more about what it is to actually train athletes rather than just get them into the gym and lift. But just from my own experience, lifting weights and getting stronger and then going out and playing tennis on the court, I felt my level improve, even though I wasn't increasing any amount of frequency of how much I was playing.
Mm.
That was just my own thing. And that kind of really intrigued me as a young coach. I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. Like all I've done is done some basic strength training and I already feel like my level on court has gotten better.
Mm.
And then I was like, oh, well, what happens if you dive into this further? And that what really started the ball rolling in terms of the passion that I had for this career. And then I think as I started to work with more tennis athletes, I started obviously starting out with a lot more juniors and then working my way and starting to work with the level that I work with now, is there's a common theme that the value that they place on the strength and conditioning side versus what they place on the tennis on court side is very low.
Hmm.
And I think that's our sport in general it's quite common amongst a lot of amateur or sub elite athletes, is that they feel like they, to get better at their sport, they need to be playing their sport nonstop and spend hours and hours on court. Now that's true, yes, the only way to get better at your sport is play your sport, but then you just forget about the other elements that you are missing out on in actually building yourself as an athlete. So like, I think from an amateur perspective or a sub-elite perspective, to build yourself as an athlete first, and then as a player second, is a really big element that gets missed.
Hmm.
And that's not to say they don't work side by side, because they definitely do. Like you still have to have both happening at the same time, but I think the athletic side gets missed because there's not as much emphasis or priority, I should say, placed on that side of your training.
Yeah. And when you experienced that, the progress you made when you had when you did the powerlifting, so you went back on court and were like, whoa, I'm getting better at tennis. because of the powerlifting. What is what were the kind of basic lifts you were doing back then?
Well, like powerlifting itself is squat, bench, deadlift. Like that's the sport. So when you do a powerlifting comp, you're trying to get your one rep max squat, one rep bench, one rep deadlift.
Actually, pretty basic. I should know that.
But for your viewers, that's pretty much what it is. That's powerlifting. Yeah. So your goal in that sport is to get those lifts better. So you do those lifts, and all your accessory training is based around building those lifts. Mm. So that's pretty much what I was doing. And as a young, 18 to 22 year old, I loved it because I felt big, I felt strong, I was building muscle, I was you're looking good. That's all you kind of want at that age. You know, you want to look great, go to the beach and look good and feel strong and whatever. Mm. So that sort of training was very basic in that sense. But at the same time, that basic style of training is really important at the beginning because you need to build a foundation. Probably if I had a coach at that stage, if I had a strength and conditioning coach, what I would be coaching myself on is layering that stuff, but also having athletic movements in there. So some of the stuff we did on court, starting to teach myself movement fundamentals and plyometrics, run mechanics, load absorption, deceleration, force output, all this sort of thing. And then you'd also manipulate your strength program around those outputs. So, yes, squatting is squatting. Like you'll see a powerlifter squat, you'll see a tennis player squat, you'll see a football player squat. How you program that squat is going to then be determined by what you're getting out of that lift. So for a powerlifter, you want to just get that lift as strong as possible so you can lift the most weight.
Yeah.
Whereas for a tennis player, while that can be an important part, there's going to be other elements within that lift that we're going to be wanting to get out of it. So it's a different reason for programming it. So I think for me, noticing getting stronger was really cool, but I think there's a lot of gaps that come from that because it wasn't a fully incorporated program. For me, it was just being young and naive and not knowing enough,
it's a great starting point.
Absolutely.
Like that's just the power side of it, and then you've got also the agility and the speed and all kind of subjects, of course. So an athlete is a powerlifter, in your opinion, also an athlete?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
So
they're an athlete in their sport. Their sport is lifting maximum weight.
Yeah. And so for a tennis player, what we see on court is a lot of change of direction and it's a difficult word for me, but deceleration?
Yep.
Yeah. So deceleration as well, and by training as a powerlifter athlete, you're not sprinting for...
I mean, you can, but you don't...
But it's not how your training will probably look like.
Correct.
So that was what you discovered, but if I watch tennis, I see more change of direction, so...
Yeah, and I think that was just natural as you study and become more experienced as a strength and conditioning coach. So, while I was doing that, I didn't have any idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you learn more and you understand the need, you do needs analysis of sport and the sport that you're working in. So tennis, you're kind of looking at the sport and you're like, okay, well, yeah, I can lift heavy weight, but that's not going to help me improve my performance always on the court. I'm going to have to sprint. I'm going to have to do agility work and reactive work. I'm going to have to learn how to stop on a dime and put the brakes on so that I can be efficient out of the blocks when I change direction. Rotation, there's a huge element there. And then it's also about force output. Tennis is a lot about when I'm moving and placing my feet on the ground to load up for a shot, I then have to apply force up and out and create power through the shot, but then I have to be able to move. I then have to balance that with the fact that a tennis match can go 3 hours, and it's 3 hours of work with quick short bursts of energy for a three shot point, or you might have a 20 shot rally. So the energy system interplay that's going on in a tennis match is very different than if I was doing a powerlifting comp, because all I have to do is one max effort and I probably get about 10 minutes rest. So
And you know in that sport what you need to do, and when you enter the tennis court, you can, let's say, just best of three, you can win 6-2, 6-2 and have an easy one.
Yeah.
Or it can be a really tough one.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then the other part of it is, like, if you're looking at a football athlete or a soccer athlete, their energy system interplay is going to be a lot different as well there again, because they've got a long field. There's a lot of longer bursts. They might be doing a lot more sub-max running, you know, in between when the ball, when they're near the ball. And then when the ball's near in play, it's like that's when your short, sharp sprints are going, or you might have to sprint from one end of the ground to the other, and they're playing for 90 minutes, maybe sometimes a little bit longer. So little, very different time frames, very different loading schemes that are going to be happening there. Again, some crossover, yeah, similarities, but very different to how a tennis player would have to navigate their match.
So when we dive into how tennis players can be more become more athletic, there are videos online on Instagram, and I could just watch. I think there was just a video about Sinner because he won the Australian Open. What he is doing in the gym, and I can literally do that and think that I will win trophies as well. But there's probably, I know there's a difference between what the best of the best are doing in the gym and what I should do. Or let's say somebody who is watching and is playing tennis now for 1 year, recreational level, there must be phases phases in their journey in playing tennis. Where should people start? Is it the powerlifting basic lift?
So I think for me it was just that's what where I gained experience in the gym. That was just my unique experience. I think there's elements of that that you can take from.
Because there I had somebody in my podcast that was saying just and you said it too, like that can be a fundamental. It can be the fundamentals. With the basic big lifts.
Correct. So I think to answer your question, it's like, okay, if you look at someone like Jannik Sinner versus, say, Novak Djokovic versus your player who's playing recreational, if you're looking at that scale, you're looking at the key thing that to look at there is what we call training age. So let's say I'm 33 years old. My training age in the gym is about 15, 16 years old. So I've been doing it for that many times. I probably started when I was 16-ish years old. I started going to the gym for the first time.
Yeah.
So you naturally build a training age of experience. Now, whereas, say, someone like your recreational player who's been playing tennis for a year, never really done much gym work, their training age, even if they're 30 years old, their training age in the gym
like
is
a baby
like a baby, gym. Correct. Yeah. Will they pick it up a little bit quicker because they've had life experience of playing sport over, say, a 10-year-old? For sure, because they'll be able to potentially understand how to move their body a little bit more when you're trying to teach a 10-year-old how to do a squat for the first time. So what if I was that type of player, I would, if I was new to it, I would 100% employ a good coach or a personal trainer who understands how to train either a person from not lifting or not being in the gym to some level of experience. If they want to take it a step further, then you'd be looking at someone who has more experience in sport, like, say, a strength and conditioning coach or an athletic performance coach, if you want to take it that step further. But generally speaking, a good personal trainer should understand how to take someone from someone who's never lifted to a nice, well-rounded strength program that can incorporate all the kind of elements that they need. What a good personal trainer versus a high level strength and conditioning coach can do is a little bit different because of the experience that they've had with an athletic population. That's not to say personal trainers aren't good at what they do. It's just that's their scope of practice. And the reason why I say that is that going at it alone is challenging. It can be quite scary going to the gym, and especially if you don't know how to do it or what to do it. You don't develop those good habits early on. So if you learn how to squat, you learn how to lift, you learn how to move in the gym, you learn how to load and progress your programs, early on, it develops really good habits, and then you can build from there, and then you're kind of accelerating your progression a little bit more rather than kind of puddling around for the first 6 months and trying to figure it all out by yourself.
Yeah.
Then like you've got like Yannick Sinner, he's same thing though. He's also still young. He's not, you know, he's not an older population by any means. He's, what is he, 22.
Yeah.
So yeah, he could have been in the gym from 16 years old as well as a young player.
Yeah.
So his training age is still quite developed, but his training, you would assume, from 16 years old would be very specific to him building himself as a tennis athlete, because he would have been identified as a potential, you know, prodigy or whatever it is at wherever he was training. And the coaches around there would be trying to tailor his programming and training towards building him as an athlete.
Yep.
So yes, so, at the beginning, sorry to go, you go.
Yeah, so in the case of Yannick Sinner, he is surrounded by experts.
Correct.
And who are watching him, and if he is squatting in with not a good form, they will correct him.
Yep.
Compared to that person who is just starting tennis and is 30 years old and plays it for 2 years, wants to go to the gym today, they maybe are just in a basic gym. We have a gym that will be promo for them. But it's literally called Basic Fit.
Yep.
So that's basic. There's no, like, no Ryan who is checking them if their form is correct. What should they do? Or maybe at home, if somebody wants to start, he's scared of the gym.
Yeah,
he's
like,
I will just start with a good, solid base. What can they
do? Yeah, I think that's where you can do your research and find some a good online coach or online programming, where even if they're not there in person to correct your form and your technique, you can hopefully watch a couple of good YouTube videos, or if that, on depending on what the service the online coach offers, they could potentially get you to film yourself doing the lift and then send you back some feedback of it, and then obviously have a bit of a well-structured program in and around that. Obviously it's not the same as having a coach there in person, but at the same time, like, a little bit of structure from a professional is going to be better than no structure if you don't know what you're doing. So I think finding a good online program to help you would be really beneficial there, but going into that with a bit of caution, because now the online world is there's a lot out there, so you just got to filter through the good ones and the not so good ones. There's a lot of good strength and conditioning coaches who also create programs for more amateur players as well, or beginners in the gym, so you can sort of scout those out, because then you know it's coming from a bit of a bigger level of experience. So yeah, it's just about finding those, or filtering through, you know, the junk that's out there and finding the good ones, so that you know that it's going to be helpful for you. And again, it can be a little bit of trial and error, but as long as, if you are just starting out, you're doing it carefully and cautiously, and you're not pushing yourself a little bit too hard, you know.
Because what could be mistakes for people to start in the gym, or to just start beginning, or from the coach, if he's not experienced, what could be
big? Yeah, I think it could be anything. It could be like incorrect lifting technique, and then loading that up, thinking you're doing it right, but then it's obviously not. And then you load up those lifts, and then because your body's in a compromised position, you can hurt yourself or get injured. Or, you know, and if you're lucky enough to not do that, you're not actually training the adaptation or the muscles in the right way. If same thing likewise for an inexperienced coach, if they just don't understand the movement mechanics enough to critique in the right way or provide enough cueing and feedback to the person in front of them, and then they're not helping, same kind of concept, they're not helping you fix it, and then they load it up and then it's missed. Or the other part would be the programming. You know, a lot of programs you see from younger coaches don't always quite flow really well. I think they don't understand that some movements are actually quite similar to others, so you don't need to do them all on the same progression.
So for example, that could be,
so a lot of the time, like a big one would be, you might do a back squat with a bar on your back, and then your next lift will be a hip thrust, and then your next lift will be a Romanian deadlift. They're all very similar movement patterns. So your back squat, your back squat's obviously more compound lift. You've got the bar on your back. There's a bit of an element of hip hinging, lot of glute and hammy work going through that. Then you go and you do a hip thrust because you want to work your glutes or your hip extension. You got the bar on top of you, you're loading from the bottom, your hips are driving up, and then your hips are kind of hinging in that same pattern. Then you go and load it up with a Romanian deadlift. A Romanian deadlift being like a straight leg deadlift where you have the bar or dumbbells in front of you, your legs are slightly bent and you're hinging at the hips. Hamstring, glute, focus. The exercises are all they're all different exercises to the naked eye, but when you look at it, they're all very similar in the loading patterns and using the same muscle groups. And then you're kind of like, well, you could do them across a week if you needed to, if that's your focus, but to have them one after the other, it's like, that's a lot of residual muscle fatigue that's going through the same joints and muscles, and it's kind of unnecessary.
There are exercises where people can start with, but not in that program.
I think they're all great exercises. They've all got their place. I think I don't think there's too many bad or not so good exercises out there. I think it's just where they're placed.
Yeah.
They all have their place. They all have their reasons. As long as you're programming them with good reason and good placement, then you're fine. Unless you're a bodybuilder. And if you're trying to build your body, that's when you're probably going to train a lot of the same muscle groups on the same day. And that's a little bit different because their job is to, or if you're just trying to get your beach body, your job, you're just trying to make yourself look good. So it's different focus.
So I think it's a really good one. The age, your gym age.
The training age, yeah.
Training age. So I go to the gym now for, I'm 26 now, I think, for 7 years. And the beginning years was just like kind of bodybuilding weight. It's fun. And like the same age, wanting to look good and build muscle and stuff. Still try to do that. But now I try to do it for the purpose of becoming a better tennis player. I can really see that it's beneficial to become and have a stronger base while when you do, like, let's say this, just a squat, and then after that do the push-up, let's say, and then do something for the lower body again, and then do pull-ups or something.
Yeah.
But it's still quite maybe a bodybuilding way or just basic lifts, but it can help you. But when it, what I like looking back, but I want to know your opinion about it. I really think the session we just did with a lot of running and stuff also, when is it something people can start with from the beginning in their training journey, or is it something that we say just start with those, like the squats, the push-ups, just build some strength and then start with?
I think you can do both. I think, I coach a lot of junior athletes, ranging from like 10 years old to 13 years old, and we still get them doing that. It's just on a, like, similar movements to what we did today in our session, but it would just be, the technicality of what we're focusing on might be scaled down a little bit. Likewise, again, like, they can squat, so I'm not going to put a bar on their back. I might just get them to hold something out in front of them, very light, just to help them develop their posture and range through a squat, just to teach them the actual mechanics of it and the competency of actually learning how to do the movement, so that when they are a little bit older or they've developed the basic pattern, they can load it safely. Likewise with their movement, you can 100% teach them how to do that. So think about a little kid who's going to school. They're running and jumping off playgrounds and chasing each other around the playgrounds and the fields and ovals and stuff. They're just doing that nonstop. So it's safe enough to do because they're doing it, and they don't come home injured unless they do something stupid and break their arm or something like that, you know, kids. But relatively speaking, they're doing that stuff all the time, if not more than you would prescribe it in a gym or a performance setting. So I would definitely teach them early on. The earlier on we teach them, the better, because then you just develop this really good competency span or continuum of movements that once they're old enough or experienced enough to load more or apply more force to it or speed or intensity, they've got the fundamentals of the technique and we don't have to actually teach it to them later on. And then they can understand it better. So like what we did today, like I could definitely give that same session to a 12-year-old kid, but some of the more intense movements, I can get them to do it, but it won't look as good, it won't look as pretty. And then you might just be focusing on a little bit more of developing that technicality of moving around a cone. I might not, the conditioning stuff that we did at the end, I may not do as much of. I still might do a bit of sprinting and speed because I think it's good to expose them to it, but how much they actually get out of that at that age, again, it depends on how experienced their training level is.
Yeah, and at the same time, when you look at the session we just had compared to what you would do with a pro player who was competing at the Australian Open, you will increase the intensity or the change of direction or the
absolutely the
technical part.
Yeah. Absolutely, and like again, and that all, and then that becomes very specific because the session that I did for you was quite general, and then with a player at the Australian Open, which I would do similar drills. The drills you can apply wherever. I could do a similar drill, but the focal points are going to be very different. The specifics are going to be different. So I might throw a band around my player's hips to focus on the intent of driving the push off, or just trying to think of the drill we did, like where you're doing your crossover steps or your lateral shifts or stuff like that. I might be actually pulling them into it. So I'm creating like an overspeed stimulus. So they're having to move into it faster. You know what I mean? So giving them similar pattern of movement because the sport's the same, but their level's different, their needs are different.
So about using the like the band to increase the power of the player. I came across on Instagram from another strength and conditioning coach who said like, there's no reason to do that until you are a beast or something like that. Like, you have to be a beast first, or so I can imagine. Also for me, like I am almost 190. How do you say that? Like 1.90 meters.
Your height.
Like my How do you say that?
Yeah, so like 193 or 191.
Yeah,
whatever you
are. Yeah. So and I'm 70 kilos.
Yep.
So that's quite light for my length. And I'm like, all right, so there's probably no need to use that now because I need to become stronger before we use the band, maybe. So there, but maybe you can say like, but then you can use a lighter band or you can. So it's all about like when I hear your story, it's about just finding, you can do a lot of things, but know what the weight is or what the intensity is or the time that you train or that your technique, your form is good.
And this is where the art of coaching and having the coaching eye comes into it. So like, you know, with a level of experience and just working with a wide array of levels and types of people and players, you can just kind of start to gauge, again, just from looking at the movement, okay, can this be loaded? And if it's the answer is pretty much no, I don't feel comfortable loading that because I can see that just, it's breaking down at a certain point. Okay, cool. We don't need to load that movement. We need to fix how you're doing the movement first and then we can load.
Yeah.
But having said that, load can assist that. So if I put a band in a certain spot, I can use the band to help you into a position or create a bit of resistance so that you can feel the drive or feel the push off a bit more or whatever the movement pattern is. And then that can also assist that progression and assist your building or the adaptation of what you're doing. So yeah, again, it's like just finding where that level is and how I'm, and what stimulus I'm gonna use to improve it. Whether that is a band on court or it might be a court. Laterally, you're just generally weak, so we need to provide some more lateral loading patterns in the gym, or your single leg work needs a bit more focus, whatever it may be. Like that overspeed stuff when you're pulling someone into it, like that's quite demanding and it's quite hard to do. So because you're actually giving them more speed than they would normally be able to produce themselves. So yes, technically you do need to be a bit of a beast to be able to do it. But having said that, as long as you know your athlete well enough that if they have trained enough that they can handle that, or they need that, because they might not even need it. Just because it looks cool on Instagram doesn't mean that it's going to be applicable for everyone. I think that's where we were chatting a bit earlier, is being cautious of what you see on Instagram, because I think a lot of what we see there, and I do it myself sometimes, not intentionally, but you want views, right? Instagram is about maximum engagement. So if you put a post out there that looks cool and gets maximum engagement, and you see that, oh, cool, I'm going to do another one of those. It may not act, I don't post things that I generally don't use myself, but the context around what I'm putting out there or what a coach is putting out there is very important, because generally, like, you're going to post a 20-second reel and that's going to be a snapshot of their training, and then you're going to try and replicate that yourself, but this is actually the 12th week that they've done this program, and this is the final progression that they're using. But you're seeing that, just that snapshot, and you're like, oh my God, that looks so cool, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, so you want to start with their last progression.
Because, yeah.
Maybe when you see it.
Yeah, and then.
Yeah.
And also the other times is that when you see the pros do their stuff, they've earned the right to do that fancy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've spent the time developing the not so fancy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, like the basic fundamental lifts.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that gets missed a lot, is that they still do the not so fancy stuff as well. They don't share that online. You don't see those things.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry to interrupt this episode. I hope you really enjoyed this inspirational story of him. And I want to give some attention to our progression program, because I believe that inspiration is the source where we can start to improve our game. It gives us the energy and the fuel to become better. But how can we become better? That's the journey I'm on, and you can join me on this journey where I connect with coaches around the world and try to connect with them to improve ourselves. What are the things we need to do outside of the court to be a tennis athlete? How can we improve our serve, our backhand, or maybe our tactical patterns? Or, as you know, the mental side of tennis. Tennis is super tough. It's a mental battle. But what are the tips and tricks you can implement in your game to improve your game, win more matches, and enjoy it while doing that? Now, we've built a progression program. The progression program is a platform for you as a tennis coach and for you as a player, where you can develop your game. So if you want to know more about it, then check out our website, go to the show notes, and let's continue to the interview.
And a hard time, for me, and I think that's where for a lot of people is during the year of playing tennis. You've got seasons of like the off season, pre-season, in competition, and then the moments you need to do physical training, so like really going to the gym, how many times you need to go to the gym in a week, but also like when it's now, let's say it's winter in the Netherlands, not winter here, but let's say it's winter in the Netherlands. I go to the gym way more than when I when I play during the competition. But sometimes when I play those matches, I tend to skip the gym sessions. And then after the whole season, I'm like, it feels like I'm back at my level again last year. Maybe let's first start with, how many times do you recommend people to do physical training?
This is the common context, strength and conditioning term. It depends.
Yeah, but let's say, for someone like you,
I would say anywhere between 2 and 4 times a week is a really nice number. Yeah. So in the middle of that, 3. I think
the 2 and 4 is when it's also when the competition is going on,
so it depends on what type of competition you're playing. So if we're talking like my athletes who are on tour at the moment, so they're playing ATP tour level events or challenger events, or when we're in the Australian Open, and the biggest thing that you learn from being in and around the Australian Open is, and you would have if you saw it a little bit, is the pros don't stop, right? So they'll play match, they'll be in, if the match was 60 minutes on court, they'll be in the gym after, or they'll be hitting more balls or whatever it is. And with the AO, you're lucky, or a Grand Slam, you're lucky because you got that day off in between your next match. So they'll go in the gym and do something. In tournament, what they do in the gym is going to look very different to what they're doing out of tournament or in their off season or pre-season, what are you going to call it? Because obviously they're in the middle of the tournament, so you're not wanting to fatigue the body, but they're in there maintaining some of the strength work that they've put into their bodies in their pre-season.
Yeah, exactly, you don't want to lose it.
Correct. Yeah. So it's whether it's through isometric holds or whether it's mobility work, whether it's just your general joint health stuff, core work, whatever it is specific to that athlete that you know you need to kind of work and maintain, or it might be a bit of movement. And then as a tournament goes on, that kind of looks a little bit different. But if you're playing, if you're playing like a weekly club comp, so if you're playing like Saturday afternoon tennis weekly, and then you might have anywhere between 1 to 4 tennis sessions during the week, depending on how committed you are and to your coach, you might have a private session, you might do like a couple squads, and you might have a hit with a friend. I still think you can easily get 2 to 3 gym sessions in and around that. And it's just about how you structure your week to do that. Because at the end of the day, there's no sort of magic pill to, or magic potion or liquid that you can drink that makes you what you are. It's consistency. And the more consistent you are, and the more you just keep a level of consistency throughout the year, some parts of the year you'll be doing more, like you said, some parts you'll be doing less. As long as there's something across your year, then you know that there's going to be either some maintenance or constant improvement. Or like you said, you're still, even if you've had a bit of this, because you've had a bit more time to dedicate to it, and then you got less time because work gets busy, or you know, you got more tournaments on. You just need to make sure that we're doing this, or having only just a slight drop off, so that you're not coming back down to that previous level, and then you can build from that new level or that maintenance level.
It's like you want your journey to be like you go up, and it will happen that it will go down, but not back to your normal level. Just like maybe, all right, very busy day, you played a tough match the night before. Instead of doing nothing, you just do maybe something at home for 15 minutes at least. Do not do it for an hour because it's very busy, but at least if you can do 15 minutes, do something, you can maintain it a little bit more instead of doing nothing and it will drop more.
So I'll give you, this is an example. We can learn from the pros, right? So if I have an athlete who goes, like after this sort of stint in Australia, my players will most likely travel to Europe because there's more tournaments there. And they might do 3 months of tournaments. That's a lot of time without training. So the way we kind of navigate it is, if you're making your way kind of through the draw and you're winning matches and you don't have much time for training, where you can, you get into the gym once or twice, do a couple of your main lifts for 1 or 2 sets maximum, so very low volume, and then all your accessory work we don't need to worry about at the moment. Your conditioning you don't need to worry about because you're getting your clay matches. But let's say you lose round one and you got a week before your next tournament, you go, cool, I can now get into the gym or whatever, or whether it's my speed work, whatever I need to do, and I can increase my volume back to what it kind of was prior to the start of my tournament, and do my 3 to 4 sets of my main lifts and have a couple of sets of my accessory lifts. As I approach the end of the week before my new week of tournaments, I might taper off a little bit, so I might just do a slightly lighter session or reduce my volume a little bit so that I can be fresh for my next tournament. And again, how everyone navigates that's a little bit different and dependent on them personally, but that's like a very easy way to navigate it. Like it's a little bit more intricate when you're looking at loads, longevity with loads and all that sort of stuff. But so if we're looking at that, it's like, okay, cool. If I've got a busy period in my life where work is extremely busy, or family or things like that, I might go, okay, cool. I just need to get in for half an hour, do a couple of my main compound lifts. I might do a squat, an overhead press, and some core work. Warm up for 15 minutes, half an hour training, and then I'm done. And then you've still maintained some level of training and strength. Obviously, it's not as comprehensive if you're really focusing on your performance and increasing some performance markers. Yeah. But you've still done something.
Yeah, it's a shift between going to the gym to really progress or improve yourself, but that it's also improvement if you can maintain your level at some point.
Yeah, exactly right. And there's still no reason as to why with that sort of dosage in the gym you can't improve.
Yeah.
You know, it's still, you still can. Like, I'm a prime example now. Like, this last couple months around this time of year is extremely busy. So for me to get in, I like to be in the gym at least 4 times a week and then doing a couple runs a week or something like that. There is absolutely no way I had time for that at the moment. So I just had to find gaps in my week where I could get in, just design myself a session that at least just is something. Yes, it's not a periodized program that's improving my performance markers or like any goals that I've set. I just, my only goal was to get in, feel good, move, keep training, do a bit of cardio, that sort of stuff, until now, this time of year, where it's starting to quiet down a little bit, and then I can realign. I might look at what I want to work on physically for myself, and then go, cool, now I can commit to it a bit more. But I still managed over these past couple of months to maintain some element of my training so I don't just drop off.
Yeah, check. During the Australian Open, I did one gym session at the gym at the Australian Open.
Yep.
At their facility, and there was only one player training there with his coach, and it was Grigor Dimitrov.
Yeah.
So it was really nice. I was like, what?
That's so cool.
That's him. And I could really see that that was just a session to, like, maybe it was not a mobility session, but just more let the body moving, do some rotational work with a medicine ball, but also just not firing, because you just use those three steps, but like more, let's just using the hamstrings with some exercises. And I was like, okay, he was there for 30 minutes, and it was probably just to, just keep the blood running in his body, maintain his level, and then tomorrow, I think the next day he had a match, and he was ready.
Perfect example. Yeah, exactly right. And that would be well thought out by his team, in terms of knowing him as an athlete, knowing what they've been working on in the preseason, and knowing that, trusting that what they've done in the preseason is done.
Yeah.
And that's, the work is done, and now it's about putting that work into practice for their matches, and then just maintaining the body throughout the tournament. Depending on the player's schedule, then after 2 weeks of the tournament, they may have a tournament straight away, or they may have a couple of weeks where they can train.
Because a big thing, let's say, I found that a really good book about from James Clear, Atomic Habits, and he was saying that he believed more in consistency instead of intensity.
Yep.
But I know some people who are like, all right, now I will make. I will improve myself because over 3 weeks I got my tournament and I want to win it. And that the day before their match, they're like going to the gym and do everything they could to become better. But by doing that, you will play worse probably because you are so fatigued and sore muscles and stuff. And at the same time, that is a mistake people can make, right? But when you have a tough match, and let's say, because amateur players, tennis is not our job. We've got a job and we play tennis.
Absolutely.
So sometimes your physical capabilities were not ready for your tough match. The next day you wake up and your body feels like shit. Like it broke down.
Yeah. I know that feeling very well.
Yeah. What's the plan from that point on?
So good question. It's a very good question, because that's obviously very common. And, you know, believe me, don't get me wrong, like a professional player who plays a tough match, they'll feel the same way the next day too.
Yeah.
Where they're very privileged is they'll have a team of physios, and they'll have, especially at the Australian Open, there's incredible facilities which are dedicated to it. There's the cold pools, there's massages, physios. All this stuff that they can have access to reduce the onset of fatigue. But this is where I guess a well-rounded training program done for long enough will help you reduce the onset of fatigue. We can't prevent fatigue because that's just a natural byproduct of our body. If you have a tough, if you play for 3 hours, there's nothing that you can do training-wise that's going to quite replicate a 3 hour match intensity, regardless of your level, because your level is going to be relative to you. So if you're an amateur player and you're playing 3 hours of tennis, that's relative, that intensity that you're experiencing is relative to your standard of tennis. You know, if a professional player comes and plays at an amateur level for 3 hours, that's not going to give much to them because they're just kind of hitting balls. But if a player at an amateur level is playing at their level and it's competitive and it's hard work and it's back and forth, that's going to be a relative feeling to what a professional is going to feel when they're playing at a Grand Slam. Yeah. So yes, they're going to feel elements of fatigue the next day. So first and foremost, if you're training consistently and your coach or your program is designed to help improve your performance, that should give you the ability to recover quicker because your muscles and joints and body is more resilient. And then what you can do is then with incorporating recovery methods is utilize that to recover quicker. It's if you don't have that training to back you in, you're going to come in and like that tennis is your only form of stimulus. You're going to come and wake up the next day and feeling like you're hit by a bus. But if we're just talking about preventing that or reducing that, I think proper warm-up, so making sure you warm up properly, which now your
before
viewer,
the match
before your match, yeah, right, which cool. Now your viewers have a really nice little system of how to do it, and then when you're obviously playing, making sure like being well hydrated, and if you need to have a bit of nutrients in your in between, like having like a banana or something like that, or electrolytes to help your sweat loss and obviously just your fueling through the match. And then post match would be about making sure that yes, you do eat properly and eat well, so healthy food, healthy diet, that sort of thing, and rehydrate after your match. And then things like stretching, maybe getting to, if it's not winter and you can get to like the beach or the pool and do some light swimming, you don't have to do it directly after the match, but the next day, either some yoga or mobility work, all that sort of thing is gonna help reduce the onset and the residual fatigue that you're gonna get. You're not gonna prevent it, you can just reduce it. I think is probably the big thing there, as long as you're diligent enough to do those things when you get home. I mean, sometimes I'm not even that diligent. Sometimes if I go play a Thursday night comp, which I tried to do a little bit this year, which wasn't too successful, but sometimes I'd get home at like 9:30 or 10 o'clock after a long day of work and I'm playing, and then I'm like, oh, I know I need to do this because professionally I know.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I really can't be bothered. And then you don't do it and you wake up the next day like, okay, I should have done it. I should have done my stretching. I should have done some, you know what I mean?
Definitely, and I think that is the tough part, that you know, sometimes you know what to do, and hopefully a lot of people know it from now on, now they listen to this podcast, that you know what to do, but maybe you're just not doing it because you're like, I'm so tired from the match. But easy fixes are just drinking a lot of enough water and doing a warm-up. And also there, like, do a warm-up for 5 minutes if you're into 5 minutes and not for 15.
But I think I think it's just trying to pick the low-hanging fruit. So it's like, what can I do that I can do? But it's also just about being disciplined enough to do it. So normally, if you go home after your match and you're going to sit in front of the TV for 30 minutes or 40 minutes and watch a Netflix show, just do your stretching while you watch Netflix.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's so like smart.
Yeah, so yeah, you're still relaxing, and it doesn't take long. You can do 20 minutes of stretching and that's going to help, you know? So it's just about not being lazy and just making sure you do those things. So then at the end of the day, like, tennis is a game that you want to play for the rest of your life and you want to be healthy. So making sure you, as you get older as well, and you're doing, and things don't work as well as they used to when you were young, you want to make sure you're creating good practices and good habits at early on, so that when you do get to those ages where you want to keep doing the things you did while you're young. You've got the practices in place to allow your body to do that. Yeah. You just have to be a little more diligent with it.
And the players who you work with, they are playing for winning the tournament or having a career out of tennis. Yeah. Do you also know that they are sometimes like they are humans, of course, or probably they
absolutely
have,
yeah, yeah.
Do you experience sometimes with some players that you're like, maybe mostly on the physical side, or that they are like, come on, you really need to take the ice bath, or you really need to stretch right now, but you're not doing it. Come on.
Oh, we're like broken records as coaches. We could just go on and on and on, making sure they're doing their things, and like, you know, they'll come into the gym the next day and they'll go, oh, how are you feeling today? Oh, yeah, I'm a bit sore. I'm like, oh, okay, how sore are you? And you go through your questions and, okay, well, did you do your recovery after court, or did you do your stretching? Did you warm up? No. It's just like, well, I told you. And then it's one of those things, you just, oh, we lost the lights. Yeah. Go turn those
back. Is that because we're not moving, or?
Maybe a timer. We're back.
Yes, we're back.
I think more so in your juniors to sub-elite, you still get it. Like, even players who are probably playing futures and that sort of level, I'd probably say even the pros, to be honest, which is why they employ teams to make them do it. Like, I think it's one of those things that, you're human.
Yeah.
So I'd love it. You do get your good ones. You do get your good eggs who are very diligent, very very routine based, and they consistent with all that. But then they'll be inconsistent with other things, and that's fine. You know, you got to, again, you're working on the strengths of your players, and if the strength of theirs is their routine and around this stuff, but they're not so good at that stuff, that's why they come to you. So you've got to then help them with that, and you're also trying not to change their personality, because that's who they are, and who they are makes them who the player that they are or the athlete that they are, and you're trying to nurture them in the right direction and help them achieve their goals or achieve greatness in their sport within their personality, and help guide it in a positive direction without changing too much of what makes them them. So if I know that this person just doesn't like to do journaling or gratitude work at nighttime because they just hate it and it just makes them miserable or whatever, then I'm not going to force it on them. There might be periods in the year where I'm like, okay, you really need to do this because it's going to help with your mindset work, it's going to help you relax or whatever it is.
Or you just notice that they're better off by taking a walk or something.
Exactly, right. So it might be, I might need you to do this at some times, but also like, okay, let's find another way we can do this. Let's go for a walk together and talk about it rather than write it down. You know, 100%. Exactly. So that's the key. It's just finding what makes them tick and helping them tick is the key. Yeah. Like, that's the end of the day. I'm there to facilitate them in their journey and be part of it. It's not my journey, it's their journey. I'm there to help it.
Nice. I really like in the story, to summarize it a little bit, is that you had some mentors and coaches around you and still have, and that makes you a coach of with a lot of knowledge, so you can help other players.
Yeah.
Those players who wants to improve themselves, like the pros, they are collecting experts around them as well. The people who are watching now, they actually do the same by listening to this, so they can learn, and hopefully at least what I'm learning is that a really big part of like becoming an athlete in tennis is of course the aspects about building strength and power and becoming better, change of direction and all those stuff. But it's really important that you know what your current level is and how you can implement the right intensity or weight or and gather feedback from a coach on how to improve your form and stuff. And that you're also the more professional you want to be, like on the short term, it's better. You can choose to not do something, like not going to the gym, or not do the stretches, or not write down why you play tennis. Like your gratitude. But on also thinking about the long term and what are your goals? Why do you do it? Or why do we do this exercise to improve the particular part of your journey?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is if we don't change, or I think one of my favorite quotes from Federer, I think he said it, he's like, and I think it was when he was like peaking, like he was number one and like number one in the world, and no one was beating him. I don't think even Rafa was beating him at that stage. Well, he was, but not, you know.
Yeah.
And I think he said, if I stay the same, I'm going backwards. And I like, that's always stuck with me. It's like, for myself, progressing my career and my life journey, you know, if you stay the same, you're not improving, you're not growing as a person or as an athlete or as a player. And I think that's just so cool to think about because, like, change is just how the world works. Everything's constantly evolving. Humans are evolving, technology evolves. So if we don't choose to evolve and grow, it doesn't mean we have to change who we are. I just want to grow. We want to evolve, become better people, better players, better athletes. So I think if you're not actively looking for methods to do that or means to do that, then you are going to stay the same, and then you know, then you're going to get frustrated by yourself. You're not improving as a player. You're not getting better on the court. So things that become a little bit uncomfortable for us, which might be stepping foot into the gym or being consistent with your training or doing your stretching, that can feel uncomfortable and scary, and you can have a bit of fear behind it. But at the same time, if you're not doing those things and that's one of your goals, you really want that thing, but to do them, you need to do these things, it's never going to happen. So you kind of just have to, at some point, take that little bit of a step or a leap into it so that you can have those positive outcomes from it and do evolve. I think that's just great lessons, not only for being a player, but just in general.
Yeah, 100%. Nice, that's great. I think just my last question would be like, is there something I didn't ask you? But maybe it could also be your advice to just the people watching what to do to become a better athlete, or maybe there's a question you're like, it's not something that is asked by me, but you want to answer it?
No, I think we covered quite a lot, to be honest. Yeah, I think I'm hoping that we covered everything that people would want to ask. I think the biggest thing is like, everyone's situation is going to be a little bit different. If you're an amateur player and wanting to get better, I think you don't have to get into the gym and do it if you don't want to. I mean, it depends on how committed you are to the sport. If you're just playing recreationally every week and you enjoy that, but you still obviously want to improve your game, like, yeah, you get a bit of coaching. I think just having small things around, warming up, stretching, things like that, is just generally good practice anyway, because, you know, our bodies aren't bulletproof. So making sure that, and then I think, you know, if you are a pro or a semi-pro wanting to make your way into that tour level and trying to compete at the highest level, I think that's when you really need to look at, okay, what have I got around me that's going to help me get there? Who's in my immediate circle? You know, if I've got a personal trainer, are they getting me to where I want to get to? Do they have enough expertise in a level of the sport that I want to get to, or have that expertise training athletes? Because it is different. It is different to train an athlete. And then finding those people to help you. And then I think one of the biggest things is actually paying them what they're worth. I think that's where a lot of people get a little bit funny with that, and they try and seek out these people, and then they find out what they cost, and they're like, oh my God, you're charging me $150 an hour, and it's like, while that may seem a lot, at the same time, you got to also understand that you're not only just paying for that hour, you're paying for the years and years of experience, study, and all the other things and all the other research that goes into it. Like, if you come to me and I'm writing you a program, I have to go away and look at, okay, if you say I've had a hip impingement for 2 years, I've got to go away and look at, okay, I've got to research that hip impingement and speak to physios and speak to that. Like, that takes time. Programming takes time. So understanding that paying people their worth is important. It's the same way when you pay your accountant and you pay your tax agent and all that sort of thing. You're paying them for their expertise in that area, and we're no different as strength and conditioning coaches. But having said that, you've obviously just got to weigh up where you place your value on in your training and your goals, I guess. But I think the biggest thing that we mentioned earlier is that tennis players at a more amateur level, and I guess sub-elite, don't quite prioritize this stuff enough. And I think it's something you need to place a lot of priority on, so that can really cohabitate with your tennis training as well.
Yeah, and experience, hopefully what you experienced, I think when you're around 18, something when you start powerlifting like, I'm becoming better now.
Yeah.
So that's.
Oh, believe me, there's a point in that where I wish I had a coach like myself guiding me then, because there were a few injuries that came from powerlifting, which I wish I didn't experience. So I do wish that I had people like me to help me at that stage, believe me. If I had my time again, I love what I did. I love the journey that I've been on, and I think it's awesome to look back on and reflect. But learning from that, I would 100% have tried to employ a coach like myself or someone of experience or that nature. Like, same way I paid my tennis coach to teach me tennis, I would have loved to have experienced what I'm now coaching some of my juniors with. You know, I think it'd be super beneficial. I would have loved it, you know. I think it would have made me a much better athlete.
Yeah. So, if you really want to improve, I will say follow Ryan on Instagram. Is Ryan Plevin.
Plevin. Instagram handle's coach_Ryan_P.
Yeah, all right. So follow him there. I think it's a great, I don't know if you offer that as well, but if people are around Melbourne, can they book a session or can they?
Yeah, for sure. If you're in Australia and Melbourne, for sure, reach out. You can send me a DM on Instagram that's probably the best way to get in touch with me, and then hopefully I can guide you in the right direction and work together for sure.
So that will also be on the show notes. What also will be there is our session, or part of the session that we just had and will have in the gym now. And there you will see also like the practical side of it, what you can do on the court and in the gym. Ryan, thanks for
my pleasure
time. I really enjoyed it.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Nice. Thanks.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening to this podcast episode. I really enjoyed to do this podcast again. And if you want me to publish more episodes, then make sure to hit that follow button or subscribe button. It's the best way to support the channel. And in that way, we can get more awesome guests in the podcast episode. That will help us improve the quality of the podcast, the quality of the guests, and also help you improve in your game. If you want to make progress in your game, then also make sure to start the 14-day trial of the progression program. Because in that way, you will see all the details of the session I had with Ryan on the court and in the gym, and also much more. Mental tips, tactical tips, physical tips, technical tips, it's all in the program. So make sure to check out the show notes.